TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Best of Bernie Sanders, High Points from His Senate Filibuster. Today, we must break up the largest banks.
While we bailed out Wall Street because they were quote-unquote too big to fail, three out of the four largest financial institutions, all of whom were bailed out very significantly, are now larger today than they were before the bailout. Incredibly, Wells Fargo has grown 43% bigger, J.P. Morgan Chase has grown 51% bigger, and Bank of America is now 138% larger than before the financial crisis began.
This appeal was part of Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech in protest of the bill that, among other gifts, extended tax breaks to the richest Americans. And Sanders is not at all the only one who demands the breakup of the banks. Among the many conservatives, whose quotes you will hear in a moment, is Alan Greenspan, who also admits that he made a mistake by promoting deregulation when he headed the Federal Reserve. Senator Sanders began speaking on the morning of Friday, December 10, 2010, and held the floor until 7 p.m. His filibuster was carried on C-SPAN and crashed the Senate service. Here is Sanders laying out the urgent need to break up the banks.
The immediate cause of this crisis is, just gets me sick thinking about it, and that is what the crooks on Wall Street have done to the American people. These people fought for a period of years to deregulate the banking industry. These people said to us, well, you know, if you just will do away with Glass-Steagall, if you will just allow financial institutions, commercial banks, investor banks, insurance companies, if you allow them to merge, do away with these walls, which Glass-Steagall since the Depression had established, my God, it will be just terrific. It'll be good for our economy, good for the American people, good for our international competitiveness. And I remember that, those debates, Mr. President, because I was at that point in the House of Representatives. I was on the committee that dealt with that. And I remember all of the times that Alan Greenspan came before the committee and said, you know, and Robert Rubin, your Republicans, your Democrats, coming before the committee and saying, oh, it's what you got to do. You got to deregulate. You got to let these guys merge. Bigger is better. And against my votes, I did not think deregulation was a good idea. I thought it would lead to disaster in some place in this world. There is a quote of mine which kind of pretty much predicts what was going to happen. But needless to say, I was one vote, and majority of the members in the House and Senate voted to deregulate. And the rest is, unfortunately, history. And what we saw is that people on Wall Street, I think, you know, I may be wrong on this, but I think operating from a business model based on fraud, based on dishonesty, understanding that the likelihood of them ever getting caught was small, that if things got really bad, they would be bailed out by the taxpayers, understanding that they are too powerful to be ever be put in jail, to be indicted, understanding that in this country, when you're a CEO on Wall Street, you have so much wealth and so much power and have so many lawyers and so many friends in Congress that you could do pretty much anything you want and not much is going to happen to you. And they did it. They did it. Their greed and their recklessness and their illegal behavior destroyed this economy. And what they did to the American people is so horrible, so horrible. So here you had a middle class which is already being battered, as we discussed, as a result of trade agreements, loss of manufacturing jobs, health care costs going up, can't afford to send your kid to college. That's going on for years. And then these guys start pushing worthless and complicated financial instruments. The whole thing explodes. The whole thing explodes. And they come crying to the taxpayers of America to bail them out. And I will never forget Hank Paulson, coming before the Democratic caucus, saying that within a few days he needed $700 billion or the entire world financial system would collapse. And my suggestion to him at that meeting is, if you need the money, why don't you go to your friends and get the money? Why don't you go to all your banker friends and your millionaire friends and your billionaire friends and get some of that money, and don't go to the middle class of this country that has already been harmed? And in fact, we brought an amendment here to the floor of the Senate, and one of the first amendments that I brought as a senator, which would suggested that the top 2% should pay for the bailout, not the American people. It got defeated in a voice vote. So what goes on in Wall Street is that we have seen a tremendous concentration of ownership there. Another issue that we do not talk enough about. I know Senator Brown and Senator Kaufman and I worked on a proposal to try to break up these large financial institutions. I think we got 30-some-odd votes on that, couldn't do it. So what the American people should know now is that while we bailed out Wall Street because they were, quote unquote, too big to fail, three out of the four largest financial institutions, all of whom were bailed out very significantly, are now larger today than they were before the bailout. Incredibly, since the start of the financial crisis, Wells Fargo has grown 43% bigger, J.P. Morgan Chase has grown 51% bigger, and Bank of America is now 138% larger than before the financial crisis began. Can you imagine that? We bailed these guys out because they were too big to fail, and now three out of the four largest ones are much larger than they were. How did that happen? Well, in 2008, Bank of America, the largest commercial bank in this country, which received a $45 billion taxpayer bailout, purchased Countrywide, the largest mortgage lender in this country, and Merrill Lynch, the largest stock brokerage firm in the country. That's how Bank of America expanded. In 2008, J.P. Morgan Chase, which received a $25 billion bailout from the Bush Treasury Department and a $29 billion bridge loan from the Federal Reserve, acquired Bear Stearns and Washington Mutual, the largest savings and loan in the country. That's how J.P. Morgan Chase, a huge bank, became even bigger. In 2008, the Treasury Department provided an $18 billion tax break to Wells Fargo to purchase Wachovia, allowing that bank to control 11% of all bank deposits in this country. Hear this, Mr. President, because this is just quite unbelievable. When we try to understand what's going on in the economy today, the rich getting richer, poor getting poorer, middle class collapsing. Today, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo, the four largest financial institutions in this country, hold about $7.4 trillion in assets, and that is equal to over half of the nation's estimated total output last year. Four financial institutions have assets worth more than 52% of our total output last year. And instead of breaking these folks up, these large institutions up, we let them get bigger. In fact, Mr. President, according to Simon Johnson, the former chief economist of the International Monetary Fund, quote, as a result of the crisis and various government rescue efforts, the largest six banks in our economy now have total assets in excess, he claims, of 63% of GDP. This is a significant increase from even 2006, when the same bank's assets were around 55% of GDP. You understand what this is about? Four financial institutions owning over half of the assets of America. You talk about economic power. You talk about political power. That is what we were talking about. Simon Johnson continues. He said, this is a complete transformation compared with the situation in the United States just 15 years ago, when the largest six banks had combined assets of only about 17% of GDP. So today, 15 years ago, 17%, six banks. Today, four banks, he claims 63% of GDP. In other words, Mr. President, over the last 15 years, the largest banks in this country have more than tripled in size. Now, Mr. President, not only are too big to fail financial institutions bad for taxpayers, the enormous concentration of ownership in the financial sector has led to higher bank fees, usurious interest rates on credit cards, and fewer choices for consumers. What do you think happens when you have a few institutions, a handful of institutions, controlling mortgage lending or the ability of people, where people get their credit cards? Today, Mr. President, these huge financial institutions have become so big that, according to the Washington Post, the four largest banks in America now issue one out of every two mortgages, two out of three credit cards, and hold four out of every $10 in bank deposits in the entire country. Mr. President, if any of these financial institutions were to get into major trouble again, taxpayers would be on the hook for another substantial bailout, and we cannot allow that to happen. So the whole reason for the bailout is that if any of these financial institutions collapsed, it would take down a significant part of the economy and millions of jobs. We had to prop them up. We had to bail them out. And it turns out that since we bailed them out, these handful of financial institutions are enjoying very strong profits, and they are paying their CEOs even more in compensation than they did before the breakdown. In my view, Mr. President, if we are serious about understanding why the middle class is collapsing, if we are serious about really getting this economy moving again, long term, we have got to have the courage to do exactly what Teddy Roosevelt did back in the trust-busting days and break these banks up. The point that Roosevelt was making is that it is bad for the economy when a handful of entities control industry after industry. They have a stranglehold on the economy. You got to break them up. The legislation that I introduced last year, S-2746, the Too Big to Fail, Too Big to Exist Act, would break up these large financial institutions. That legislation would require the Secretary of Treasury to identify every single financial institution and insurance company in this country that is too big to fail within 90 days. And after 1 year, the Secretary of the Treasury would be required to break up these institutions so that their failure would not lead to the collapse of the U.S. or global economy. We passed a financial reform bill, which I supported and got a major provision in there asking for disclosure of the Fed and an investigation of conflicts of interest at the Fed and an audit of the Fed during the financial crisis. But overall, I by no means think that that legislation went anywhere near far enough. I think it was a modest piece of legislation, and I think that's an issue we've got to revisit. In my view, Mr. President, and I worry very much about the future because I have the feeling in my stomach that that day is going to come around again when these huge financial institutions are tottering, when they're going to go running to Washington and they're going to say, hey, you got to bail us out. In my view, if an institution is too big to fail, it is too big to exist. Let us break them up so that we do not have to go through another bailout of Wall Street. Furthermore, I believe that when you have that kind of concentration of ownership, when you have four large financial institutions holding half the mortgages in this country, controlling two-thirds of the credit cards, and amassing 40% of all deposits, this is not good for a competitive economy. We're supposed to be living in free market capitalism, real competition. This is not free market competition. This is a huge concentration of ownership where a few people have enormous power over the economy and, with their wealth, the political life of this country. No single financial institution should be so large that its failure would cause catastrophic risk to millions of American jobs or to our nation's economic well-being. No single financial institution should have holdings so extensive that its failure could send the world's economy into crisis. We were there 2 years ago, and in many ways, despite the passage of the financial reform bill, we are even more there now. The big, huge financial institutions that we bailed out are bigger, more huge today. And interestingly enough, on that issue, Mr. President, it is not just progressives like myself who hold that view. There's some pretty conservative folks who are honest conservatives. You have at least three Federal Reserve Bank presidents that support breaking up too big to fail banks. James Bullard, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, president and chief executive of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, Kansas City Fed President Thomas M. Honig, and Dallas Fed President Richard W. Fisher. These guys don't have my political views. I am a proud progressive. My guess is they're conservatives. But anybody with an ounce of brains in your head understands that four large financial institutions that have assets that are more than half of the GDP of the United States of America places us, A, in a very dangerous position in terms of too big to fail, and B, it is just bad for a competitive economy. Is there any wonder why people are paying 25 or 30% interest rates on their credit cards? That's because these guys issue two-thirds of the credit cards in America. Is there any reason why they were issuing fraudulent mortgage packages to people? Because there is not the kind of competition that should be there. But this is not just Bernie Sanders' point of view. Here is what Kansas City Fed President Honig said, and I quote, "I think they should be broken up. I think there's no reason why, as we've done in other instances, of finding the right mechanism to break them into their components. And in doing so, I think you'll make the financial system itself more stable. And I think you will have long-run benefits over our current system, which mixes it and therefore leads to bailouts when crises occur." End of quote. This is Thomas Honig, the head of the Kansas City Fed. He's absolutely right. But, and I'm going to get to the reason why in a little while, we've not been able to do this. We've not been able to do this because Wall Street sends their lobbyists down here in droves, and Wall Street provides zillions of dollars in campaign contributions, and Wall Street fights like the Dickens to make sure that any strong provisions that some of us might bring up is defeated. Here is what the president of the Dallas Fed, Mr. Fisher, said, quote, "Based on my experience at the Fed, the marginal cost of too big to fail financial institutions easily dwarf their purported social and macroeconomic benefits. The risk posed by coddling too big to fail banks is simply too great." And Mr. Fisher continues, "I think the disagreeable but sound thing to do regarding institutions that are too big to fail is to dismantle them over time into institutions that can be prudently managed and regulated across borders. And this should be done before the next financial crisis, because we now know it surely cannot be done in the middle of a crisis." End of quote. And that's Dallas Fed President Mr. Fisher. Mr. President, they are already in the process of breaking up big banks in England. According to the Washington Post, the British government announced a while back that it will break up parts of major financial institutions bailed out by taxpayers. The British government, spurred on by European regulators, is forcing the Royal Bank of Scotland, Lloyds Banking Group, and Northern Rock to sell off parts of their operations. The Europeans are calling for more and smaller banks to increase competition and eliminate the threat posed by banks so large that they must be rescued by taxpayers, no matter how they conducted their business, in order to avoid damaging the global financial system. Mr. President, very interesting development occurred on October 15th of last year. And as I mentioned earlier, Alan Greenspan, who was the chairman of the Fed before Mr. Bernanke, and I had our run-ins. Mr. Greenspan, along with Mr. Rubin and others, were the chief proponents, Larry Summers in there, were the chief proponents of deregulation of financial institutions. And Mr. Greenspan and I had more than a few arguments. But on October 15th of last year, Alan Greenspan, who admitted that his views on deregulation were wrong, and I give the man courage for at least admitting that he was wrong. Did a heck of a lot of damage, but at least he had the courage to admit that he was wrong. He was quoted in Bloomberg News as saying, and I quote, "If they are too big to fail, they are too big." In 1911, we broke up Standard Oil. So what happened? The individual parts became more valuable than the whole. Maybe that's what we need to do. End of quote. Alan Greenspan, the architect of deregulation, citing the fact that in 1911, we broke up Standard Oil. So here you have Greenspan, who helped cause this crisis, at least having the courage to understand that now is the time to begin breaking up these big financial institutions. They have enormous power over our economy. They have enormous power over our political life. Their lobbyists are all over this place. You can't walk down the hall without bumping into some of their lobbyists. So we've got to start breaking them up, and the American people have got to be prepared for a major fight to take on these huge financial institutions. Mr. President, former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker, who has advised the Obama administration, supports breaking up big banks so that they no longer pose systemic risk to the entire economy. According to a recent article in the New York Times, Volcker said, and I quote, "People say I'm old-fashioned, and banks can no longer be separated from non-bank activity. That argument brought us to where we are today," end of quote, Paul Volcker. I couldn't agree more. That's what I'm talking about. You've got to start breaking up four financial institutions which led us into the economic disaster we're in right now, that remain much too big to fail, that we're going to have to bail out again and again and again, and that today have a stranglehold on our economy. The New York Times said that under Volcker's plan, quote, J.P. Morgan Chase would have to give up the trading operations acquired from Bear Stearns, Bank of America and Merrill Lynch would go back to being separate companies, Goldman Sachs could no longer be a bank holding company, end of quote. That's exactly what needs to be happening. The reality is, and I come from a small state, we have community banks. Here's the irony, Mr. President. The banks in Vermont, in the midst of all of this financial disaster, they did just fine. They are small, locally owned banks. They know the people they lend money to. The CEOs are not making hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. They know their community. They know what loans made sense. Now, I may be old-fashioned like Mr. Volcker, but I think that's what banking is about, to lend out money to people in the productive economy, to business community that can use the money to expand, create jobs, to homeowners that need that money to buy a home, not to be living in your own world, engaged in a huge gambling casino, producing and selling worthless products that nobody understands. In recent years, what we have seen, incredibly, 40% of all profits in America went to the financial institutions. Small number of people working there, relatively small. 40% of the profits, because it is a huge gambling casino. We need financial institutions to go back to the way banking used to be. And the job of banks is to provide affordable loans to the productive economy so that we can produce real products, real goods, and we can create real jobs when we do that. Robert Reich, President Clinton's former labor secretary, has said, quote, "No important public interest is served by allowing giant banks to grow too big to fail. Wall Street banks should be split up and soon." We've got a lot of people, some conservatives, some progressives, are saying the same thing. If we're going to rebuild the middle class, the way to do that is, among other things, to change our disastrous trade policies, to make it clear to corporate America that they cannot continue to sell out the workers of this country by moving to China, other low-wage countries. And we also have got to have a much more competitive economy, one in which four large financial institutions do not own assets of more than half of the GDP of this country. And on that point, I find it very interesting that it's not just progressives like myself or Robert Reich, but you have some conservative bankers, people who are heading Fed banks around this country, who are saying pretty much the same thing.
That was part three of a four-part mini-series with excerpts from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech in protest of the so-called Tax Relief, Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. The act also extended tax breaks to the richest of the rich. Come back when Sanders explains how important it is to not only consider our $13.7 trillion national debt and our deficit, which is $1.4 trillion, but also our trade deficit. He says we can't have an economic recovery unless we enact trade reforms. Bernie Sanders was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2006 after serving 16 years in the House of Representatives. He is the longest-serving independent member of Congress in American history. Before his 1990 election to Congress, Sanders lectured at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Come back when TUC Radio returns for more gems and intriguing facts from Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech. He spoke in the Senate on December 10, 2010. Thanks to C-SPAN for the audio from their 8.5-hour video. Links to the video, to Bernie Sanders' Senate webpage, and to the recipients of Federal Reserve largesse are on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail, or a credit card by phone, or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.